everybody. Welcome to the No Film School podcast for the week of April 25th, 2024. I am Charles Hayne. I'm here with Gigi Hawkins.
Hello.
And Jason Hellerman.
Good morning.
We, this week, are talking about packaging. And then we're going to follow up our conversation on packaging with a viral Blue Sky thread. Yep, I said it. We've moved on. There's now threads that are viral on other platforms, not threads or posts, which just went under, or the platform formerly known as Twitter, a viral Blue Sky thread about working with AI artists in production. That is this week on the No Film School podcast.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
All right. So first up, packaging. What used to be a dirty word, now sort of inevitably a reality of making a movie. It's funny. I was in an interesting conversation recently with a good friend. We were biking through the park and we were talking about the fact that, like, you know, if you made Citizen Kane today, it would have to be called Hearst, because now everything is about pre-existing IP, even though Kane itself is not just about William Randolph Hearst, like the way in which things get made. And we had this interesting conversation because, like, while I am disappointed, the reality of every movie ever is that it is a product of the culture and the technology and that make it. And like in 2024, to make that movie, it would have to be called Hearst. You, in order to market it in this media environment, you can't just say, I'm going to do it about a media titan. Like, you have to have a pre-existing IP. And I feel somewhat the same way about packaging. Like, it gets a very dirty word, right? Like OVITs and packaging and the whole like death of the independent auteur. But on the flip side, that is the reality of how we make productions now. And there are movies, you know, you could argue The Holdover is a classic example of a package, right? Combine Giamatti with Payne with a good screenplay. And the screenplay was from a TV writer. The screenplay wasn't even from like a big famous writer, but like Payne, Giamatti, winner release, that is packaging. I guarantee you that film got financed because of the group of elements that were put together to finance it. And like, I still like The Holdovers. Somebody called it mid Alexander Payne, and I disagree. I quite liked that movie.
It was like one of the best movies of last year. Anyway.
Yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed it. So I think packaging is something that every filmmaker needs to have a handle on and understand, because we're in 2024, and that is how the things happen. If you have so the counter of that is like, if you have a script in which there is no parts for people, like if you have one of those scripts where there is no Paul Giamatti part for Paul Giamatti, you're going to have a much different animal trying to put a package together. And packages are how all these things happen.
It's a little bit of a chicken and egg. And I feel like if we just reframe it as, you know, it is part of the process, part of the cycle, and not treat it like a dirty word, it can be actually an empowering thing where you're like, let's create this story together. Let's, now that we have Paul Giamatti attached, like, it kind of brings it alive. And I understand why it helps sell it through from a business perspective, but also an understanding what kind of movie we're making perspective.
Now, the drawback to packaging, that has to be said, is when you end up getting limited to just people who are repped at your agency.
Yeah.
Because it's your agency putting together the package. And that's the problem when it's like, oh, well, Giamatti's not here. So you know who'd be good for the holdovers? Chris Pine. And like, I love Chris Pine, but Chris Pine would not have made sense in the holdovers.
Yikes.
Hottest teacher ever. Yeah.
I mean, it would have been a wildly different movie with Chris Pine out there in short shorts in New England.
Yeah.
But like, you know, so that is the drawback. That is the legitimate drawback to packaging, is when you end up limited to your where you are repped and the people that are playing in the sandbox you are in. That is definitely a problem.
Yeah, I think we should just, we'll kind of circle back here for listeners. So if people are wondering why packaging is so important now, go back and listen to our Survive to 25 episode, which kind of gives the current state of the industry. But the quick cliff notes is that right now Hollywood is more risk averse than it's ever been. The reasoning is
such a statement.
I know. Yeah, it's like instead of being at 100%, now it's at 110% of risk aversion, probably 200%. Basic idea is streamers spent way too much money. It's now very expensive to borrow money to make movies. There's a lot of different factors that have evolved to give us the current Hollywood we have today. In current Hollywood today, when people greenlight a movie, they want to greenlight it in a way where they think it's going to reach the most amount of audience for the most bang for your buck, right? So it's like, if we're spending $65 million to make this movie, it needs to at least hit two of the four quadrants to make sure we make our money back here and then that it travels overseas. Now, at studios and streamers and any company that has development funds to make money, what they'll do is compile lists of both actors and directors and, you know, lower level, probably not writers, but they'll have a list of writers, preferred writers they like to work with. Those lists will be organized kind of like IMDb is with the star meter, right? It's like, hey, who are our most bang for the buck people that we represent and what can we get them in? How do we get them in the biggest movies, right? How do I get our Margot Robbies and our Ryan Goslings in our Barbies, right? Like with our Greta Gerwigs, how do we create a package like that to make sure that when we take it to a studio, the studio will want to buy it, right? Because studios have their list of people they want to do it. Now, the best way to think about packaging, I think the way it is now, is through the eyes of a writer or a director, right? Let's say you're coming to your agents with a project. You've got untitled G.G. Hawkins project or untitled Charles Haynes project or, you know, titled Jason Hellerman project. No, I'm kidding. But you've got these ideas. You're going to your agent. What you're saying is, hey, I'm such and such element. I'm the writer of this project. I'm the director of this project. How do we attach more people to this project so that we can get people interested in paying for it? Before in the 90s and honestly early 2000s up until really the 2010s, you could take out a naked spec. Naked spec, besides being like one of my favorite terms of all time, is really just a spec screenplay that has no one attached to it because writers don't count for anything. But truly, like it's a spec screenplay that has no one attached that then you'd take to a studio, the studio would buy it, and they'd package it themselves. Those days are over. I'm not sure what studio execs do anymore, because packaging used to be a huge part of their job. But right now, what happens is you and your agent or your manager will try to assemble a package, then you'll take that package out to production companies or producers, or you'll take that script to a producer who has some time on their hands, who wants to help you package it. You will then hopefully attach a director, or if you're a director, you'll start to attach actors. You will get hopefully unnamed famous people attached to the project you're working on. And then you'll take that project and take it to buyers or financiers. That can be studios. It could be independent financiers with a lot of money. And you'll say, look at this great package I have. Please buy it. And hopefully they do.
It's beautiful.
Right?
And then, it has a bow on it.
Exactly. Yeah. Of course, there's like a dozen problems with this scenario. One of which is like your script has to be perfect by the time you turn it in. Nobody wants to develop anything anymore. They want a finished idea that they can then package and take somewhere because developing sometimes takes time. If you're a writer, the issue is, let's say they attach a director. That director will be like, hey, I'm really excited to be part of this package. Could you maybe do a free pass with no money based on these notes? Because I think that's what'll finish it. And you have to decide whether or not you want to do that. And then they'll attach an actor, unnamed actor or actress, and they'll come in and say, oh my God, this part is amazing. This is my Academy Award performance, but could you do some notes before we take this out? And you work with the actor and the director, you do another pass, free pass usually, because again, this is all on a spec, you know, script doing whatever. then let's say you have all that stuff done, that might have taken 12 to 18 months in my experience, and you still haven't been paid. And then hopefully the producers haven't lost interest, haven't gotten another gig, haven't done whatever, that you have the window to shoot in for the people you attached previously, that the director didn't book something, that you as the writer aren't busy doing something else. Let's say all of those things go correct. Now you're going out to financiers with that package. And hopefully while you're going out, no one's tweeting something offensive or opening a movie that bombs or any of the other things that could happen that could ruin your package. But it's a really weird time in the industry because this has become really the only way specs sell now. Naked specs really aren't selling anymore. I think maybe one sold this year in January, but it's like a writer, director, low budget thing. Really what's happening now. And I could say, like, as no film school's resident writer, that's what I found to be the only way to do business right now, is to wait these 18 months. I think we've talked a lot about different things I'm working on. I have a project that's shooting in June that we just finished packaging, knock on wood, I think on Friday. And that's a fun thing, but I wrote that in August of 2020. So it's been a 4-year ordeal of passes and rewrites and stuff like that. So it does take a long time. Gigi?
Given the extensive nature of putting this together and the time that it takes and the amount of key stakeholders that you have to have bought in, like, who are your sort of pillars that you rely on during this process? Is it your manager? Is it whoever is attached to produce? And like, how do you keep that momentum going?
Yeah, you're definitely relying on your reps first, right? First and foremost, because they have a fiduciary duty to you, right? So fiduciary duty for, you know, I didn't go to law school, but for those of you, it's like they are legally bound to help make you money and not to screw you, right? I think that's like maybe the best way to describe it. So like when I go to my manager with a spec, so I'm out with a spec right now. It's called The Man in the Box. It's an action movie. It's about a guy who mails himself into like a Boeing type company, pops out in the mailroom because he's going to kill the CEO who stole his invention. And it's like a fun action movie, a limited location, you know, one big building, whatever. So The Man in the Box, we're taking it out right now. Nobody steal that idea. I'd be really pissed if you didn't listen to the No Film School podcast, but it's out there. So I've just...
Honestly, listeners, if you steal anything from all of us, it'll be such a betrayal.
Yeah, such a betrayal.
Like stealing
Yeah. But anyway, so we're out with this right now. What I do with my manager is, first off, I make a list. Here's 10 to 15 directors I think would be awesome for this, right? And I organize that list. Tier 1, probably ungettable. Tier 2, here's some blah, blah, blah. Tier 3, more indie type. Like, are they ready to make a movie? Like, this is a sub $25 million action movie, right? So it's like, blah, blah. And then tier 4 is like, maybe like the old hats who've done it 10 times, who I don't say like have fallen out of favor, but like, hey, they haven't worked in a bit, or they're doing films in Europe. Like, do you think they'd want to come back? So I do that for directors. I do it for our titular character, our man in the box. Same deal. Here's 20 names I think would be amazing. Then what he does is sit around with the people he works with. He brings up in the weekly meeting, right? Hey, Jason's got this new spec. It's called Man in the Box. You should read it. Everyone hopefully reads it over the weekend. Probably reads the first 10 and the last 10, right? We've discussed that before. That's what happens. They're like, who should this man be? Do we have any connections to packaging, to any of these directors or any of these other people? They make that list. He will then take it wide, start making those calls based on the level of tier, right? The tier 1 guys first, maybe they're not available. All right, we're right up immediately now in the tier 2 people. Do these people have production companies, right? Like, do they have overall deals different places? They go through that whole list, start making those subs. We'll usually go directors first and then start to go to actors with production companies because a lot of times directors are very picky about who you cast in it, do whatever. And then we'll just also go to producers, right? Producers who we think would be interested in this, who have done movies like this before. We hit all those, hopefully attach someone, a producer, and then it's up to you and your manager or you and your agent to keep the fire burning, right? Once someone's attached, okay, now let's go out to these actors ASAP, because you can get bogged down in free rewrites, in development hell, as you know, we talked about it. But it's really just like kind of being the, not like the squeaky wheel, but just being like, where are we at on this? Who have we subbed to? Blah, blah. And making sure they're following up and doing different things, because there's lots of ways you can get lost in the sauce on it. And that's why I got to keep writing new things. I mean, that's the unfortunate cycle of the Wheel of Hollywood is then as Man in the Box is out there, I'm finishing another spec and then working on another one. So, yeah.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
The bigger problem, too, is the delay of payment. So I remember when I started in the industry, I was specifically like, everybody in the film industry takes 6 months to pay. You get used to it, but it's really hard when you start because you're waiting on money from 6 months ago and you're not getting anything now. Whereas in a year, you're getting payments from 6 months ago while you're doing work now. But 18 months, and 18 months is by no means guaranteed,
right,
is a tremendously long amount of time to wait to get paid for labor. So the lack of the ability to sell a spec, the lack of the ability to get paid in the meantime, the lack of the ability, you know, because of mini rooms, even if you're doing some TV stuff in between, that TV stuff is not going to be a season. And writing a spec in the summer, that TV stuff is going to be 4 weeks in a mini room.
Absolutely.
So it's a completely different animal, which makes it a challenging world. I mean, I also, you know, the lessons always go back to what are the lessons we can take? And I think one of the lessons we can take is thinking about this as you ideate your project. Like, a lot of people talk about writing as being the moment when you are sitting at the desk, and it is. But writing is also deciding what project you are going to write next, its feasibility within the world that exists. Like, you know, there are projects that Coppola didn't get made and had to sell his own winery in order to make $100 million to do. Guillermo del Toro famously has wanted to do In the Mouth of Madness for a long time and has still not been able to do it, despite it being Guillermo del Toro. Mm-hmm. Like, after the Oscar, you would think, and we still don't have an In the Mouth of Madness movie, and probably never will, because holy shit, it sounds big. So there are realities, you know, I think that it's the job of a filmmaker to bend reality as far as you possibly can. But I think if you want to bend reality, you need to understand reality so you know how far you can push it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, like, trying to go out and write as your first sail into the Mouth of Madness would be a uphill battle. And at a certain point in life, you want to start trying to make strategic decisions where you write things that have the potential to participate in the universe, that has that part that Chris Pine will want to play, that has that part that, like, is the interesting hook angle. And I think it's totally okay to collaborate with the reality as it stands. And, you know, we could, as much as we want the world to be a different way. I think we should want the world to be a different way. And we should bend the world as much as we can. But I also think it's all right if you want to make things, to make things. I also wanted to comment on something to pivot to our next topic, that what Jason talked about, which is the job of the writer is doing those notes, hopefully paid, but often free, once the director's hired, once the actor's hired. There's a to pivot to our next subject, which is collaborating with AI. First off, DJI is doing a really great marketing campaign right now where it's like collaborating with machines for their new follow focus, which I think is a really brave angle, because I'm like, that is like, DJI is not saying this will focus for you. DJI is saying human being focus will be easier. And I bet it will. And I'm very excited. I like the angle DJI is taking there. But there was a viral tweet thread over the weekend from a nameless Hollywood studio art director, which means they work in visual effects post-production, doing art direction, building scenes and whatnot, who talked about the fact that they got hired to art direct a job where the producer had already hired a bunch of prompters. So prompters are people whose job is to prompt AI to get results. And the art director was very upfront where they were like, I would not have hired prompters. I don't think we're there yet with prompters, but look, there are already prompters on this job. And I'm going to do everything I can to work with them, because in filmmaking, there are elements we can change and there are elements we can't. The sun is setting in an hour and a half. What shots are we getting in the next hour and a half? Let's figure it the fuck out. And most filmmakers tend to be like, oh, you hired some prompters. Let us see what we can get.
Yeah.
And the reason the tweet thread or the skeet thread, as they call them on Blue Sky, skeets, the reason the skeet thread went viral is because it was a very honest appraisal of what the experience of working with prompters was like.
Mm.
And the thing about all of it is that we work in an iterative career.
Yeah.
We work in a career in which you are constantly revising and tweaking, and you think you have it perfect, and you've done your copy edit, and you've gotten it great. And then you send it to someone, and someone's like, oh, well, you know, thinking about this character, wouldn't they really X in this scene? And you're like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck, you're right. Oh, fuck, you're right. How did I miss that? How did I miss that? And that's part of the job. Part of the job is knowing what collaborators to listen to, but that's part of the job. Like, Jason being able to do the director's notes and the actor's notes are more important than writing the original script, in my opinion.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because being able to keep the script's voice intact while also giving the actor the speech they want is hard. It's harder than the original script, I think. And it was really interesting because this whole tweet thread was basically like, I would get this art and it would be fine. And I would have notes, and it was impossible for them to do notes.
Interesting.
Because you cannot go to the AI and say, give me the exact same thing you gave me again, but make the sky darker and give me a better composite.
Wow.
Like it was just a complete waste of time because you could not do fine-grained iterations.
Yeah.
Where you could go in. And what was interesting is this art director said, the most successful person I was working with was the prompter who'd added prompting to their skills but had previous art design skills. So they could go into After Effects, they could go into Photoshop, they could cut the key, they could... So what ended up happening a lot is she ended up... The art director, I think it was a woman, I don't want to assume gender, but if I remember correctly... Anyway, the art director, they ended up working primarily with the person who had previous art skills, because the art skills were the iterative skills of the let us keep polishing and refining until it is what it is.
Right.
And so the prompt would come in, the prompter's art would come in, but the only one who could make the changes was the only one that the art director wanted to keep. Now, you know, art directors are not always in charge of hiring and firing, but I think it is a good reminder that, you know, people talk about the doom of Sora AI and how it's like, oh, wow. Do you see that Sora demo? And I'm like, yeah, I saw that Sora demo, but I still suspect I'm going to hire an art director or an artist who can go in and one of the most beautiful shots of the Sora demo was like this sweeping shot of a helicopter shot of the California Gold Rush.
Right.
But it was like high noon. And maybe I need that establishing shot to be night.
Right.
And I don't know that Sora is going to make it sunset well. And I'm going to need an artist to go in and make it sunset using the elements Sora gave. I'm still going to hire people who are good at stuff, because I just can't imagine a situation where Clippy is going to be able to be like, oh, you need me to dial up the the feist a little bit. You need
I
some
love
funny
how it always
I see
back
you need a
Clippy.
Funny joke in this scene.
I love how it always comes back to Clippy.
Well, it is Clippy. Also, I found out the best thing recently, which is that all the internal testing at Microsoft for Clippy was that Clippy was really annoying and they shouldn't release it. But it was primarily the testers at Microsoft at the time were largely women. It was like a majority women team. And the majority men team who were designing Clippy were like, I think the testers are wrong. This isn't annoying. We should roll it out. And then they rolled it out. And of course, everyone was like, no, this is really annoying. Like, this is really annoying. We don't like this. So yeah, I mean, the best thing is like Super Clippy. And Super Clippy needs to do notes. And it was, I don't know, I got so much relief from this thread because I suspected this would be the case. And I'm glad that we're starting to hear anecdotes in the field of not that this is an impossible use tool you'll never use, but that this will be a tool in the toolbox of people with skills.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you'll still need a person with skills to do it.
That, I think, is like the main thing I take away from it. It's like, it's still skilled labor. It's just a different kind of skilled labor. And as long as they keep it that way, then I feel like everybody's copacetic in, you know, what that feels like.
Sometimes I'm like, I don't have anything to add because I just completely agree. And I do think that the perspective that you guys take on AI is healthy, and we have extremes on either end, and you make me feel better about where we're at always whenever we're talking about like the next iteration of things. There is an interesting podcast on Script Notes recently that also addresses a write-in question about AI and the iterative process that I recommend folks listening to. I'll drop it in the link. I guess one thing that I'll say about the iterative process of constructing these stories and scripts that you used as the transition, Charles. This week, we'll be speaking with the screenwriter of Challengers, Justin, I can't say his last name, and I'll say it correctly on the next podcast. It starts with a K. But the script is available online, and to be able to read it and then see what comes through in the film and hear the process of rewriting while in prep and in production shows how iterative it is and how it makes it so much better, even though, like, you have that blueprint there. I think it's just such a great study of how iterative the filmmaking process is.
Well, also, I want to go back to the part that you said that Jason and I make you feel better, which is one of the jobs of being a team member in filmmaking is making people feel okay about a speculative project. And the ability for Jason, like when Jason is doing notes that an actor asks for a script, it is not entirely about the actor having amazing story notes, although maybe they will. What Jason is really doing is making the actor feel heard, engaged with, participatory, collaborated with, and that is what is important. And AI can't do that because, frankly, AI often gives people the heebie-jeebies. And so while I do think it is a tool that will be part of things, and I do think that there are areas of the world like the modeling industry where there's big issues where we're already seeing like fashion designs just upload the design and it's never even made. And then it's like AI is created on a digital model. But like there are real implications there that are different than they are in the storytelling with images world. But yeah, I mean, that's part of the job is to try and make people feel good about the endeavored project of the future that we're working on in the industry and also on individual projects. Like that's, you know, I'm not a doomer about AI taking everybody's jobs. I am a little bit of a doomer about AI and water taking up all of the drinkable water in the world, but I'm going to leave it to other people who have much more of the data behind them. And maybe it'll all get more efficient and it'll be okay. Or maybe we'll just figure out how to have people without water. Maybe we just won't need it.
That'd be great.
Yeah, but that's
a dystopian movie idea, maybe.
I mean, I think for some people, if we could really figure out how to do this without water and people never had to pee again, I think there'd be people who are psyched. Yeah, there's definitely people who are into that. Yeah, so that's sort of, you know, it's always about looking back to what is the ground reality in front of us and what can we do with that ground reality and what are the tools at our disposal that allow us to do the things we want to do. And the things we want to do are always dictated by technology. So,
yeah.
Always.
And look, packaging and tech is here too. Like, you know what I mean? Like it all circles back, you know, to like, who does the internet say based on an algorithm, someone is famous, right? Like we joke around about, but like if you're in the top 100 on IMDb Pro, that's probably good for you, right? You know what I mean? It's like, that's just an algorithm saying who clicked on your name. Yeah. But it's figuring out how to use these things to your advantage. If you're making your lit cast lists, doing it that way, not picking like, you know, it'd be amazing. This fourth lead from Gunsmoke in 1962. It's like picking famous people doing different stuff. And again, like keeping the stuff in the hands of human beings who have reactions and not just like looking on a paper, right? And like the kids call it like someone giving you an ick, right? It's like I don't want an algorithm telling me who's the hottest person in the world, but I want to look at the list that it thinks and then pick the people that I think should have the human charisma to carry through. But it is such a...
There's always going to be problems with measurability of stardom, right?
Always.
Like the IMDb star meter. I remember I was directing a movie with a whole bunch of people who were all way more famous than me, but I had the highest star meter because I was coming off hosting a TV show that had just been airing. Mm. And so like, there was a moment on set, we were all joking about star meter and somebody looked me up and I had the highest. And I was like, I am behind the camera. I hosted a TV show once. I am not famous, but I had the highest star meter compared to someone on set who had like 200 movies under her belt, but nothing recent.
Oh my God.
And so the star, like every measurement tool we have is gibberish, right? Like Pulp Fiction, John Travolta would not have been high on the star meter when they were casting Pulp Fiction. So, but he's still a star. He's still a celebrity. He still had meaning in the minds of the executives. He was still able to make it
exactly
a thing. So I think that there's I will always fight against anything that numerically ranks anything because it's very, like, I think it's always flawed. Anything you try and use as a measurement tool will always be flawed. But the reality is someone, someone probably needs to be in the top 1,000 in your movie.
Yeah.
Like, if your movie is entirely unknown, you're going to have trouble getting $10 million to make it. And that's just reality, which doesn't mean there's not going to be an exception, and you could be that exception. But maybe strategically, it might make more sense to write something where you could have someone in the top 1,000 in your
Always keeping us grounded and realistic.
I try. That's, any podcast where good. I can argue that numbers don't mean anything is a podcast. But yeah, the official anti-math podcast out here. I actually like math. Incredible. I just don't like measurement.
Fair. Who does?
Fair. You know? Yeah. Fair.
Yeah. All right. Where I'm on Blue Sky, as you can tell by the fact that this whole podcast was about a Blue Sky viral skeet thread.
Skeets.
On the Blue Sky. I recommend it. Blue Sky's good. You can follow me there. I don't post much, but you know, you could probably start an argument with me if you tried.
I'm at Jason Hellerman on Twitter, on Blue Sky, Jason at nofilmschool.com. If you just want to email me and chat, keep the questions coming. I think Hollywood's so weird right now that the more questions you ask, the better situation you're going to be in. So, you know, keep asking questions. Yeah. And let's go from there.
I'm at Lost in Graceland, where you can see me doing the Challengers Challenge, which is simply something that I made up in celebration of Challengers coming out, which I'm so freaking pumped for. And you can tune in tomorrow for that interview with the screenwriter. You can also get more No Film School at nofilmschool.com. Follow us on social at No Film School and like, rate, and subscribe to the podcast, which if you like the podcast, if you like hanging out with us, tell a friend. We'd love to get out to more listeners.